What is up, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 19 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and I have to warn you all, things could get weird this week. Our guests, after much lobbying from one of them in particular, will be the boys from Blue Shirts Breakaway, Ryan Mead and Greg Kaplan. I want to ask them to confirm it. I don't even know if they'll know for sure. I think they were the first New York Rangers podcast that I ever went on when I first took the job as the New York Rangers beat reporter. And now they will be returning the favor. Ryan and I were DMing about this a little bit back and forth. He's joked about it quite a few times. I think for especially those of you that listen to both podcasts, it should be fun. I mean, it could end up being a disaster. There's definitely a possibility of that. We haven't recorded it yet, so I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I'm thinking it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm excited for that. We'll get to those guys in just a few minutes. But before we do that, let's dive into the latest with the New York Rangers, where things have settled quite a bit after a really crazy week. Of course, you know I'm talking about all the stuff that happened with Tony DeAngelo. I'll really quickly run you guys through the latest that I have been hearing on that. And it's getting pretty quiet. I had said on the podcast last week that we had heard Darren Dreger report that he had talked to DeAngelo's agent, Pat Brisson, and that he was feeling like there was a decent or good or whatever it was he said possibility that there could be a deal forthcoming and that there were quite a few teams interested. I followed that up by making a lot of calls in the middle of the week last week. Basically was told that the Rangers did receive calls, but it was mostly teams that were looking to offload bad contracts, teams that were looking to basically throw some players on the Rangers that they didn't want anymore and force the Rangers to eat money that way or deal with something long term, you know, basically deal with a problem of their own in exchange for taking on the Rangers' problem in DeAngelo. Now, the Rangers have been pretty adamant that they don't want to do that. The Rangers have been pretty adamant, I've been told by multiple sources, that they are not willing to retain anywhere near half of DeAngelo's salary, which is speculated about in quite a few places. I don't even know if they're willing to retain any of it at all. And to make any kind of a deal happen, you would have to think that they would have to be willing to do at least a little bit. I wrote a story last week where I questioned, you know, would they be willing to consider retaining 25% of DeAngelo's salary, which is $1.2 million a year. That remains to be seen. I do know, though, that anything where another team is asking for the Rangers to take on 50% is a no-go for the Rangers. Their fallback option, which I mentioned last week and I've written about a couple times now, seems to me to be, in a lot of ways, the most logical thing to do, which is to wait until the summer and then buy DeAngelo out. We've talked about how manageable the costs would be from that. Under $400,000 next season, under $900,000 the season after. To me, that makes a lot of sense, and that is kind of the final card that Gorton has to play here, which will force him to not have to dive into some deal where he takes on something he doesn't want to take on. I did write a story prior to the Thursday night game last week, which was a couple days after the snowstorm when I had made a bunch of calls. I did confirm that the Rangers would be interested in Sam Bennett, the center from the Calgary Flames, who we know has requested a trade. The Rangers would be interested in him, depending on the price, depending on the deal, all that stuff. But what to me is very unclear still and is looking more doubtful by the day is how much interest the Flames really would have in DeAngelo, especially considering the Rangers not being willing to take on a big portion of his salary. So I feel like that deal is probably a little bit of a long shot at this point. I know that the Rangers would have been interested in making it happen had they been able to come to agreeable terms, find some kind of a compromise. So I definitely know there was interest on their end. But as far as the Flames and their interest in DeAngelo, or quite frankly, any team's interest in DeAngelo, that is a big, big question mark right now. This looks like it could drag on for a while. It could go into the summer. It could end up resulting in the buyout. I'm going to try to do a little more digging on this later in the week and maybe have a story for you guys by the end of the week. But right now, things are pretty quiet on the DeAngelo front. As for the team, they had some very good vibes going into Monday night's game against the Islanders. They were 3-0-1 in the previous four going into that game. Then they go ahead and they lose that game to the Islanders 2-0. It was one of those games where you're not sure how much to give credit to the other team in particular Varlamov, the goalie for the Islanders, who has now shut the Rangers out twice this year. He did play a good game, had 30 saves. The Rangers had some quality chances that he stopped. The two that come to mind in particular were at the beginning of the third period when Artemi Panarin had a breakaway and then Mika Zibanejad had a two-on-one situation. Varlamov makes a save in both of those spots. And then the game is scoreless going into the final 10 minutes. And the Islanders are able to finally break through, kind of gut their way with that fourth line of theirs to score a couple goals against the Rangers and come away with a 2-0 loss. I did think, and Chris Kreider said this after the game, that the opening night debacle against the Islanders where the Rangers lost 4-0, that was a similar game in some ways, except the Rangers last night did a better job of sort of remaining patient, not getting too risky, not getting out of their structure, not having defensive lapses, not having unnecessary turnovers and giveaways. And I did think that the Rangers were more disciplined. They only took one penalty on Monday. They played a much better game than that first loss against the Islanders in the opening night of the season, but they weren't able to come away with any goals. That's obviously the big thing that you have to underline here. And then they have the late game lapses where they end up giving up the goals to the Islanders and losing. The story that is becoming harder to ignore each day is Mika Zibanejad, who has one goal all season, only 1 point in his last 8 games. And it's becoming harder for anybody, I think, to believe that Mika having COVID-19 during the preseason and missing most of training camp because of it is not having any lingering effects on him. I don't know for sure. I touched on this, I believe, in last week's episode that I asked Mika about this. And predictably, he didn't make any excuses. He didn't want to even go there. He gave me a flat no when I asked if he feels like having COVID is hindering his play at all right now. David Quinn has hinted otherwise and says that he thinks that it has taken Mika a little while to get back to 100%, but that Quinn keeps saying this recently, that he feels like he's seeing signs that Mika's coming out of it. He feels like Mika's having really good practices. The problem is that's not translating to the game so far. I did think that Mika's line with Kreider and Buchnevich looked better in spurts in that Monday night game against the Islanders. They did have some chances. Mika ended up with 3 shots on goal. I thought that you saw signs of life from them, but they still are not clicking and buzzing consistently the way that we saw them last year. And that's a problem for the Rangers. If they could get that line going, the outlook for the season, coupled with the improved defensive play that we've been talking about, coupled with Igor Shesterkin playing better of late and looking like he's kind of establishing himself as that number one goalie right now. If the Rangers were able to get their top six, everybody in that top six going, Artemi Panarin has been playing well and putting up his usual points. Strome has been better lately for sure. Kako has been better lately for sure, but it's still not consistent enough as a whole from the top six, with Mika being the biggest issue right now. If they could get them going, then this team in this very difficult division suddenly looks a lot more competitive. I still don't know or believe necessarily that they would be a playoff team in that circumstance, but you go into each game feeling like they have a puncher's chance, they have a legitimate shot of winning. So getting Mika going is a big concern right now. That is a priority for the Rangers for sure. I do wonder, and a few of our Twitter questions touched on this, if David Quinn at some point, and I feel like I've written about this 5 or 6 times in the last year or so, but I do wonder if Quinn will at some point consider playing Mika with Panarin on the same line in an attempt to get Mika going, spark him, do something to help him out right now. We know that the Rangers have not done that very much since Panarin's been here. They started his first season with it for like 4 or 5 games, got away from it. They go to it sometimes in late game situations when they need a goal, but Quinn has been reluctant to start it that way for the vast majority of the game since Panarin has been here. A big part of that is Panarin and Strome playing well together, and they have been playing pretty well together, although they weren't great on Monday night. But the 5 or 6 games before that, they had a pretty good stretch, and Mika having such good chemistry with Buch and with Kreider. So I have to think that eventually that will be something that Quinn and his coaching staff are talking about, if they're not talking about it already. Like I said, if there's a way to get Zibanejad going, I think playing with Panarin might be your best bet. And then you figure out the rest from there. I mean, the difficult situation for the Rangers is if you have those two guys together, your second line becomes a lot weaker looking. But if your top line is producing at a high rate, maybe you're willing to make that sacrifice. So we'll see. The lines right now have looked the same for the last couple games. A lot of people were questioning why Quinn was shaking it up so much throughout that first maybe 7 or 8 games of the season. But the last 3 games, 4 games maybe even, it has been pretty consistently the same. The lines at today's practice on Tuesday were once again the same that we saw on Monday and the games before that. So it looks like they will roll that way into the series with Boston. The biggest bit of news to come out of today's practice was that Alex Georgiev will start the first of the 2 upcoming games against the Bruins, this one being on Wednesday night. I will tell you guys, I was a little bit surprised that Georgiev didn't start that Monday night game against the Islanders. And the main reason was this, or really 2 reasons. Number one, we all know Georgiev's history against the Islanders. He has been better against them than he has against any other team. But the other thing is, the Rangers starting on Monday are beginning a stretch of 8 games in 14 days. There's no way that one of those goalies, Igor being the most likely, would play 7 or 8 of those games. At most, it's going to be 5 or 6. So you know the other guy is going to get 2 or 3 starts. And if you're going to pick your spots for Georgiev, which you had to figure Quinn would do, I figured it seemed more logical to give him a game against the Islanders, the team that we know he has success against, and then start Shesterkin for this Wednesday night game against the Bruins. Now what you're probably looking at is Igor Monday, Georgiev Wednesday, Igor Friday, and then you take it from there depending on who's playing better. Quinn did tell us that alternating goalie thing that he had mentioned a couple weeks ago is kind of out the window right now. It was never going to be a long-term thing anyway. I told you guys this, that once one of those guys established himself as being hot, Quinn would likely ride him. We saw that with Igor for the last 3 games in a row. Now Igor takes a loss. Quinn said it was predetermined all along that Georgiev would play Wednesday, although I have a little bit of a hard time believing that had, let's say, Igor pitched a shutout on Monday night, that he wouldn't have played Wednesday. But he didn't. They lost the game. Georgiev plays Wednesday. It'll be his first start since that night against Pittsburgh when he had the post-game altercation with Tony. And curious to see how he does, curious to see how he responds. I think Georgiev strikes me as a guy who can kind of get motivated and focused by that kind of stuff swirling around him, so we'll see. But I was a little surprised that Quinn didn't go Georgiev Monday and Igor Wednesday. Instead, he went the opposite. We'll see how it plays out. Lots of Twitter questions this week, so I'm going to get into all that stuff on the other end of the break. But right now, we're going to kick it to the interview with the Blue Shirts Breakaway Boys. Cross your fingers. Let's hope this goes smooth. Try to limit the cursing from those guys. And I hope you guys enjoy it. And I'll talk to you on the back end. All right. Due to popular demand, or at the very least, some vocal people on Twitter, we have the crossover show that some of you have been asking for, and that is myself with the boys from Blue Shirts Breakaway, Ryan Mead, Greg Kaplan. Welcome to the show. These guys, many of you probably or might know them from the Best Rangers podcast that's not hosted by a beat writer.
Oh, oops. Oops. My apologies. So, anyway, yeah, great. Thank you for having me on, Vince. I hate to cut you off, but I really do love doing it. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, Greg and I work very hard together on the podcast every single week to achieve such great heights, to be the number one podcast that's not hosted by a beat writer. Of course, the second ranked beat writer in the rankings of beat writers, that is. So thank you for having us. And it's an absolute pleasure. And I have to say before we go to Greg, it is a nice city here. I have to be honest.
It's cold. I'll tell you that.
It was a new ice city. I'm just trying to quote Mr. Capocacco himself.
Can I tell you guys something that I haven't told on the air yet about the name?
Yeah, hit me. I'm worried.
So we spent some time talking about the name, and we settled on New Ice City. We liked the way it looked with the logo and all that. I like the name for sure, but my fiance's sister, like after I had recorded 2 episodes, she knows nothing about hockey, not into sports at all, but she's seen Mighty Ducks. And she said to me, why didn't you name the podcast The Flying V? And it crushed me.
Because there's still time.
I mean, it's too late. It's too late now. I'm already rolling with it, but
Vince, if your nickname could be the Flying V, that is an awesome sports nickname. We don't even have nicknames.
It would have been a cool show name, but it's too late. New Eye City is what it is, and we're rolling. So
this is terrible. I'm gonna call you the Flying V from now on, and I apologize in advance.
I said this in the beginning of the show, and I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if you guys will be able to confirm this or not, but I'm pretty sure that you guys were the first Rangers podcast that reached out to me when I took the beat reporter job. And I went on with you guys, like, I don't know, it was probably like a month or two into when I had taken the job. It was like around the time that the Rangers drafted Kako. How did you even like find me, or like, how did that even work? I don't even remember how I ended up on your show.
I think I know how this worked. We're obnoxious, like both of us, at getting guests. And at the time, I'm pretty sure we know everything about like Twitter Ranger atmosphere and Twitter blog stories and Ranger blog stories. So I think you popped on the scene and we were like, who is this guy? Because we know everything. We know like Larry's whole like life story, college life story. We do the research. We put in the time to be New York Ranger experts. And then we reached out to you, I think, right away. Greg, did you book Vince immediately?
I think it was pretty quickly. I think it was the banner photo that actually.
That was it.
We saw your super professional glamour shot banner photo. And we're like, this guy needs to come on the show. We need to talk. Forget about whatever he's saying about the Rangers. We need to talk about this photo.
I think about that photo all the time.
Vince, I will also say, while we may have been your first, you wasted no time to find seconds, thirds, and fourths for the podcast interview.
What can I say? I have a hard time saying no. I like to think it's because I'm a nice guy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what we say about you too. Very nice.
I mean, I won't name any names for the most part. It's usually a fun experience, but
yep.
I think that it was the most natural and probably had the best time with you guys, if I'm being honest.
Oh, so that's we appreciate it.
But that's the last nice thing I'm going to say to you guys.
Thank you so much. I've listened to your podcast multiple times. That's about as nice as I'll be.
Yeah.
I don't like to give Ryan credit for
what?
Literally anything, but I think people are a little caught off guard the first time they start. Like when we ask them to come on the podcast, I think a lot of people come on expecting it to be a little bit more professional, a little bit more structured, but we're just two guys that like to talk and give people a hard time and make jokes. And within 5-10 minutes of the interview, people just loosen up. They like to have fun. They like to just go with it.
What do you think about Kako's development this year? Do you think the third line time on ice? It's a shame he's getting below 9 minutes. How do you feel about that? Should we fire Quinn tomorrow? Like, I don't know. I'm an idiot with a podcast.
Well, maybe that is what makes you somewhat endearing, is because you don't take yourself too seriously.
I do take Kako's development seriously. Let's be serious for a minute.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, I don't want to be those time on ice guys out there. Time on ice guys, they kill me. I don't understand that.
Larry Brooks was a time on ice guy today. Did you see that?
I saw that. Yeah. Big time Larry with time on ice with Lafreniere. We'll see. He's a bust, I heard. That's the rumor.
I look at the time on ice after every game. I mean, I look at everything after every game.
Yeah, we'll be right.
That has been one of the many weird things that I found that fans fixate on. And you know what? I know I quoted Greg on this like a week or two ago when you were going off about somebody complaining about time of ice with somebody. I don't even remember who it was, but like if you don't look at it with any context, if you don't try to understand why that might've happened and just get mad about it because you see a number, that can be one of the more frustrating things to deal with.
It drove me nuts today because Larry's entire, not to call Larry out. I understand he works for a different publication, yada, yada. I'm sorry if I'm crossing beat reporter lines here by doing this, but he says, you know, Lafreniere, first of all, had 13 minutes, 48 seconds of ice time last night, which is pretty strong for a third line winger. But then it's like, well, he didn't take a shift after the 11 minute mark in the third. Well, why would he? It's a tie game. You're going to lean on your top six. And then when it wasn't a tie game, the Rangers took a penalty and Lafreniere doesn't kill penalties. At what point is Lafreniere and the third line going to get into this game? It was a tie game. When it's a tie game, you want your top six out there all the time. It just, the conversation drives me nuts. Like you said, Vince, when there isn't context to it, it's not like, and it's also, we're talking about the last 10 minutes of a hockey game. Are those last 10 minutes really going to be make or break for Alexis Lafreniere's long-term development? It's one game. Can we relax? Can we take a time out?
Well, I will say that I Did not read the story. I have a ton of respect for Larry. Larry is a Hall of Famer. Larry is like, as far as the Rangers beat goes, he's like, him and Carp are like two legends to me.
Of course.
So I'm not going to comment on that story at all. I will say, though, that it did strike me a little bit looking at the ice time last night that I thought it was one of the most evenly distributed games that they've had so far. Everybody played at least 10 minutes. There's almost always some fourth line guy that ends up playing seven or eight with Quinn. And as Greg touched on, Quinn, when it's a close game late in the game, if there's anything we've learned about David Quinn in the last couple of years, it's that he rides his top guys at the end of a close game. But yeah, I thought actually the ice time was pretty evenly distributed. The one guy who continues to play like huge minutes, and no Rangers fans would obviously complain about this, is Adam Fox. The guy's like 25, 26 minutes.
He's unbelievable. Yeah. He's limitless. I say this every single time he plays. I put the question out on Twitter last night, like, would you trade him straight up for Dahlin at this point? And I think that question a couple months ago was obscene. I think most people that follow hockey would be like, oh yeah, you have to trade for Dahlin. He was the number one overall pick like 3 years ago. And I put it out and a bunch of people were like, absolutely not. Adam Fox is the truth. I don't know if that's true, but the point that we're actually even questioning if we should do that shows how much he's transcended this year, even in through like, what is it, 12 games now? He's been tremendous. The guy is a workhorse. And honestly, he's changed the way this defense has looked. I mean, you covered the team last year. It was not exactly the most defensively sound team. This year, the top four has Adam Fox and Keandre Miller, and they look bona fide after 13 games. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, actually, one of the Twitter questions I'm going to finish the show with is a lot about the defense and the pairings and stuff. And I want to talk Rangers hockey with you guys. I told this to you, I mentioned this to you guys that I really didn't plan anything. I figured we would just talk.
That's what we do.
I'll come up with some. It's weird because I'm used to you guys asking me questions, and now it's, I guess I have to ask you questions because you're on my podcast. But I did, the one thing that did cross my mind like the minute before you guys came on was, I know you guys have been doing this for several years.
Like six almost.
And
almost
I know six. I know you're with the Athletic now, but like that was kind of like after years of doing this thing on your own. Like, how did this start with you guys? I don't even know if I know the story.
Oh, the actual story is this. We both went to college together, Greg and I, but we were not friends like at all. But we ran in the same, and we're still not friends. I want to make that super clear. but we ran in the same circles at that point in time. So I've always been an ideas guy, and they're not always good. Greg will probably mention some of the not good ones. Okay. I've had a lot of bad ideas, tremendous amount of bad ideas. I'm getting this out of the way. And I started a blog, or I recruited a bunch of my friends to do a sports blog called The Waiver Wire. It did really well. We got like a hit, one article got like 500,000 views on movies. It was like the top post on Reddit. And then all at the same time, we all stopped caring about it and writing it in 2013. Don't know what happened. All at the same time, we're like, screw it. We're not doing this anymore. Then we kept the group chat together and we just kept it going. And then I was a big podcast guy. Greg's been a big podcast guy his whole life. I've been listening. I'm off the Bill Simmons bandwagon now, but I was like on the train in 07, super hard. Love the medium. I went to go find a Rangers podcast and there just like was none. There was nothing out there in like 2014. I was like, this team's in the Stanley Cup. How can I not get like a Rangers podcast that I could listen to with like some fun people? So I went to Greg and Greg was like, I'll do it, but if we ever miss a show, I'm never doing it again. And we've never missed a show.
Yeah. I have to tell you that Ryan is kind of the king when it comes to half-brained ideas. It's very,
I've noticed
him.
That. I follow him. I've noticed that.
He throws a lot of stuff out there and it's sometimes hard to get him to follow through on stuff. So when the Rangers were in the Stanley Cup final, Ryan brought to my attention that there just wasn't a Ranger podcast. And if there was something we could do, it then took us an additional 6 months to get anything recorded from there. But that on that website, we used to do these little 30-minute podcast episodes for stuff that like we had a baseball podcast called Ducks on the Pond. Big fan of the name. We had a basketball podcast called The Low Post before Zach Lowe stole that from us. I just want to say, if you go back into the history, there is a podcast in like 2012 called The Low Post, and it's a bunch of just
idiots,
fresh college idiots writing about it. Also, Ryan mentioned the fact that we went to college together. I didn't know Ryan went to college with me until after we had graduated. I had heard about him, but I just thought he was this kid who was friends with people that used to visit. And then it was brought to my attention that Ryan transferred in and went to college with me for 2 years. I had no idea.
Yep. So you didn't know him as the guy who walked around campus in a Pope suit?
No, it was giraffe costume back then and some other weird stuff.
Yeah. Ryan and I somehow, I'm very good friends with a lot of people that Ryan went to high school with. And I just never saw him in college. And we went to Marist. It's not exactly like...
No, it was like 3,000 kids.
Yeah, it's the one college where you should know everyone you're graduating with. And I just had no idea this kid existed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really that simple. Ryan was like, why isn't there a Ranger podcast? I was like, buddy, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. If you want to do this, though, we have to take it seriously. And we have to set a date. And we have to do it every week. It's the only way it's ever going to gain traction. And to Ryan's credit,
And to Greg's credit, we've done it every single week.
Every week. There was one week where I was only on. There was one week where the internet ate one of our episodes and it just never existed.
Yep.
And then there was another week where Ryan essentially did the episode by himself because I was calling basketball games for Savannah State University in the MEAC tournament in Norfolk, Virginia. And I didn't have the technology to record it from a hotel room. So I had to call in for 5 minutes and then I just wasn't on the episode after that.
But other than that, we've never missed a show. That's exactly the whole story. And then we got a Newsday article. The Athletic picked us up and some other weird stuff happened.
So Greg really valued the commitment is what I'm hearing.
Well, I mean, Vince, you'll know this too. The more you do it, it's the only way you gain a following is by being reliable and for people to set their schedules to when they can expect an episode. And if you miss a week, you're going to lose people. I remember the first year Ryan and I did it. We had like the crisis of confidence moment where we thought to ourselves, are we going to keep doing this in the summer? And I think we just kind of rolled the dice with it and said yes and figured we'd have something to talk about, whether it was Ranger related or not.
Oh, my God.
And then
a lot of Mets.
A lot of Mets.
And I'm not a Mets fan, which is the craziest part.
But, buddy, I got to tell you, I cherish summertime episodes now because – the 9 months in which we didn't have Ranger games to talk about, and we had to do not one, but two episodes a week, thanks to our contract with the Athletic. If we survive that, and it's at this point, I think we
could do anything. We could do a Ranger show whenever we want. Doesn't matter. We'll find a way.
I say that to people all the time because I had 10 months with only 3 Ranger hockey games. And not only was I starting the podcast during that time, but I am responsible for producing stories pretty much every day. So it really made me flex those creative muscles and think outside of the box and trial and error and try new things. And it's not ideal. I would much rather be able to walk into the locker room and do all the stuff that we used to do and go to games and have games to cover. But
you'll get there next year.
Yeah, be back. I hope so. I was actually having this conversation with a writer from another team yesterday, and I was feeling optimistic that come September, October, most people, hopefully, knock on wood, are vaccinated and the locker room access is back to what it was. But I've heard from people who aren't as convinced. And I do think the NHL will do everything it can to like be absolutely sure. And I don't want to say use it as an excuse if they're not absolutely sure, but I think that they will take a very cautious approach. And I'm not sold that I'm just going to walk into training camp and walk into the locker room every day like I was in 19 and in the beginning of 20.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Vince, you obviously have much more experience and knowledge of this working. But I do feel like the longer this goes on, the more these post-game Zooms are just going to become the new normal. And we'll just never see writers in locker rooms again for whatever reason. I have nothing to back this up. I have no inside knowledge. You are the actual beat reporter, and I am just a guy who pretends to know things about.
We play a journalist on Twitter. Yeah, that's what we do.
But I just, the vibe I get is it always felt like the leagues would have loved to move in, not just the NHL, MLB, NBA, NFL. They would always have loved to move in this general direction anyway. And it just feels like they've been given an excuse to do it now.
I don't totally disagree that. I think they will milk the situation to their advantage as much as they can. But I also know that, like, I'm a member of the Pro Hockey Writers Association. We would put up a big fuss about that, and we will do whatever we can to restore our access. And it's so important. Like, I've talked about this on the podcast before, and I've tweeted with people about it and whatnot. But the last thing I would do is complain, because I'm so grateful to have a job and still have stuff to cover and write about and all that. But it's totally different doing the job this way. I mean, the one-on-one conversations that you would have with players and people around the facility on an everyday basis, that gave you so much to work with for your job and the exclusivity of it and all that. And now with the group Zooms, it's just not the same. It really is. You're not, everyone's working off the same quotes. Everybody mm-hmm. hears the same questions. I think the players don't feel as comfortable completely opening up with you. And it's totally different. And it makes our jobs way harder. But again, you know, it is what it is. I totally understand why they're doing it right now. And I'm certainly not going to complain about it. So,
well, to speak on that, to go on that real quick, because we have Rick on the show. Obviously, he's another beat writer with you, and we've had him on a lot before this whole thing happened. As you all know, everyone out there knows exactly what I'm talking about. And when he came on, we could get real insights of what he thought about people from talking around the team, and get insights of how he feels about certain players or how they're looking, you know, facial expressions they're making, you know, body language doctor stuff. And then he comes on and he's like, you know, I saw Kako on Zoom and he looks pretty good. And that's good and all that. But as a fan, you crave and you want more. You want these deep insights from your beat writers. And I know Larry does a great job doing that and trying to find out more and digging. So do you, Vince, to give you credit, even though I said I wouldn't do that. But it's just, it's so much harder. It is. And I hope, and I really want you guys to get back in there, because I, you know me, I live off those insights, like Ryan Strome, you know, being in the locker room, being the voice he is, or the way Mika Zibanejad or Chris Kreider are acting in the locker room. And those stories matter a lot.
Ryan, just imagine getting to get into that locker room right after Georgiev had Tony in the chokehold.
Let's not talk about that. But or for example, today there was a big story that came out that Kaapo Kakko was on another podcast and he smashed a TV after playing FIFA with Tarmo. Like, I want you to ask Kaapo about smashing the TV. That's fun. That's good content. And we just can't do that on the Zoom. It's just not the same.
Yeah, I used to be able to go up to a guy and, like, you know, if they got into a fight the night before or whatever, if something funny happened, and you could just joke with them and ask about it. And, you know, sometimes I would keep those conversations between me and them. But a lot of times, if it was a place that I felt like the player wouldn't have a problem with me going, those are fun little insights to put out for the fans. What it's forced me to do, on the other hand, though, is try to communicate with people in different ways. That is one of the things that I will say it has kind of forced me to do, is more texting with people that might work for the Rangers, might work from other teams, calling more agents. There's a few players that I have direct lines of communication with. And that was something that, you know, I think had we known this was coming, we might've made more of an effort into establishing those kind of things, but it has forced you to think outside of the box and communicate with people in other ways. So that's one of the things that I have honed in on a little bit with this pandemic, and not only current Rangers, but like prospects. Like, I've probably talked to more college coaches or people in Europe or things like that in the last few months, just because that is the way that I have to try to go about those things now, because I don't get to walk up to people face to face.
Yeah. It's really hard to adjust that way. And I hope, you know, I hope now that once the world goes back to quote unquote normal, you'll have the best of both worlds to become the perfect beat writer.
Well, we'll see about it. We'll see about that. All right. Let's go Rangers a little bit here. For you guys, I know you guys are immersed in this stuff. I know you do your podcast. I know you deal with fans and talk to fans and kind of have your finger on the pulse of what fans are thinking and saying and doing. What to you has been, I don't know if I want to go positive or negative first. Should we go positive or negative first?
We could probably
go positive first, though.
Yeah, right. The positive is the defense and Miller and Adam Fox. Like,
well, I was going to say, what in your mind has been the most interesting positive storyline that you have been like fascinated with so far this season? Either one of you.
I'll take first, and then Greg could go. For me, it's Keandre Miller. Just there's nothing more to say other than I can't believe he's ready. And he's this good so quickly. He was ready. Like, after game one, he looked shaky. He did. Like, okay, he was a rookie out there. We don't really know. But since game two, he looks like a bona fide NHL defenseman who can't be frazzled. He's made some mistakes, but to show his skating ability, his ability to defend even Barzal last night in the Islanders game, he shut him down multiple times. It's a whole different player, and he gives a whole different identity to this Rangers defense that has been struggling for truly years now at this point. So the defense and and in general, like Trouba's looked a lot better. Ryan Lindgren is an anomaly for how good he's been for the draft prospect he was. And Adam Fox, you can't say enough good about him. He's a guy that the Rangers are going to have to, at least I believe it's this summer, they can extend him. They're going to have to immediately start getting into the 8-year extension conversations with him. And I'd be surprised if they didn't.
Yeah, it's Keandre, but for me, it's more it felt like with Keandre, the entire fan base wanted him to be good. We wanted to will it into existence. It was a player that was so easy for everyone to get behind. And he was playing a position that for as long as Ryan and I have been podcasting, which we're going on year 6 now, the Rangers just haven't had a clear future on left-handed defense. There has been it's the passing of the guard from Dan Girardi and Mark Stahl, but the Rangers, they didn't really have this chosen product on the left-hand side of the D that we could all point to and say it's going to be him. We all wanted it to be Keandre Miller, but I still think there was some skepticism coming off what was a rather shaky sophomore season in Wisconsin and whatever the reason was for that season to be the way that it was. But it's not just that the fans wanted him to be good. It's that even with that in mind, he has found a way to exceed those expectations, which felt literally impossible. Ryan and I did at least 5 shows between the draft in October to opening night where we were saying it's not the end of the world if Keandre doesn't make the team out of camp. It might be beneficial for Keandre to get time in Hartford. We were coming up with reasons for why people shouldn't panic about him not making the team. But then he makes the team, and he's immediately one of their 2 best defenders. And it's just a storyline that not only were we all hoping to have, but against all hope, we weren't really expecting it. So the fact that he's already playing at this level, that has to be the most positive story that you've seen from this team this year.
To follow up on Greg real quick, our coworker at The Athletic, Corey Priman, had an article out, and I said this on our podcast yesterday, I think. I can't remember. I mix all the shows up at this point. But he had he ranked 153 players under 23 in the NHL in prospects. And Keandre Miller didn't make that list.
Ryan, you and I were DMing about that. I saw.
and now, like, Adam Fox was 30 on that list. I could only imagine if he redid that list again, and if Keandre Miller continues this play, he's got to be immediately in the top 50 at least. Yeah. He's been tremendous. So the expectations weren't there. I was pining for him to be an opening night starter. It happened. He made the team. I'm thrilled about it, and I can't wait to see what he does the rest of the season.
I'm going to feed into the narrative that I say yes to everybody, but I went on another podcast earlier today and I was,
earlier today? What do you mean earlier today?
Wow, double dipping. Unbelievable. Yeah,
right before practice today. And, I was asked what I thought was like the most interesting thing about the team this year. And I said by far to me, it's monitoring the development of the young players. And, you know, we could talk about them making the playoffs and that would be great if they did that this season, but the ultimate goal is building and seeing if they can form this core that eventually might position them to not only make the playoffs, but compete for a cup. And if you look at all the young guys, Lafreniere was quite clearly the guy that everybody had their attention on to begin the season. Kaapo Kakko, I think you guys might like him just a little bit. There's a lot. Igor Shesterkin, we can name a million guys, Adam Fox. But Keandre, to me, has been the most fascinating because I talk to people from the Rangers, like people high up in the Rangers. I talk to scouts. I talk to his college coach, Tony Granato. Usually a college coach is going to pump a guy up. They all seem to think if you had asked them like right after he signed that he was almost certainly going to start in the AHL. I kept hearing about how difficult the transition was for a defenseman to go straight to the NHL. He had only played 2 years of college, yada, yada, yada. And that he was still raw, especially on the defensive end. And it has just been amazing to me, not only that he impressed in camp, they gave him the opportunity to be in the opening night lineup, but that he's a top 4 guy. He really has been already, you could argue, the most consistent partner that Jacob Trouba has had since he arrived in New York. And he just seems to get better and better and excel. And the defensive play has been way better than what we were told it was going to be. I mean, he still is going to make mistakes. He makes little mistakes here and there. You mentioned the shaky opening night, but even beyond that. But then he makes, like last night, a couple glaring plays where because of his because of not only his skill, the length, the skating, all the physical tools that he has, but the awareness where he prevents that Brock Nelson opportunity, or he strips Barzell of the puck on
him. Poczek was unbelievable, Vince.
Yeah,
yeah. Truly was.
So, I mean, yeah, to me, I agree with you guys that he has in a lot of ways been the most fascinating early season story here.
Before we get to the negatives, which I know we're getting to now, I'm going to throw a hot take out here. This season, despite what everybody on Twitter says about firing Quinn, has already been a massive success. You have gotten the development, and the kids that you wanted to show the development have already done it and started to prove that they can hang. Adam Fox, Keandre Miller, everybody but Lafreniere has done. Lafreniere has won overtime goal. Of course, there's going to be other situations for Lafreniere here to prove himself over the next couple of weeks. But everyone else that you've wanted to develop and play better has. Like, Kapokako has looked like a totally different player. It's night and day from last year. We already talked about Keandre Miller and Adam Fox. There are a lot of pieces here that are going to be good for the future. They're already developing. And if you had a checklist of what you wanted to see this year, everything has been checked with the exception of the Lafreniere play. And of course, Mika Zibanejad, but you're going to hope that he gets back to his normal self.
Yeah. Lafreniere, I think, I know it's a shortened season, but 11 games is to me a little early to jump to any conclusions. I have a lot of confidence that he looks more comfortable, even though he's not scoring, than Kako did 11 games into his rookie season last year. Mm-hmm. All right, but negatives, and not just negatives, not like what you right. guys necessarily take an issue with, but what I want to hear is what storyline that maybe the fans fixate on has been the most annoying to
right,
you.
Right, go ahead.
It's easy. It's the fire Quinn.
It's so easy. It's so easy, dude.
I just don't understand what. I don't get it. I understand that David Quinn isn't a perfect coach. I'm not saying that he is a top 10 coach in the NHL. Ryan and I have even said this on our show. We think that David Quinn might be painfully average, where he could be just the 16th best head coach in the NHL, where he's just, there are as many people in front of him as there are behind him. But I don't understand what he's actually done this year to justify wanting him fired. I think Ryan and I, for the love of all that is holy, Kapokako, we tried very hard to lower expectations for this season. We said that this is a super young team that is not really playing with a set defense, that has a new defensive coach running in his system, that is trying to break in about six different players under the age of 23 to figure out where they fit into the lineup. That is not necessarily a recipe for success, specifically in a division where you're playing the Bruins, the Flyers, the Penguins, the Capitals, and the Islanders eight times each and nobody else. So we were telling people, like, the Rangers are probably going to finish sixth or seventh. That's what's going to happen. And then when the Rangers get out to the 1-4-1 start, when, mind you, the games in Pittsburgh, they looked the better team than the Penguins, but for whatever reason, just didn't win them. Everyone wanted him fired. And I'm just looking around. I honestly want to know what happened. Why did everyone all of a sudden think that something magical was going to happen? The kids are growing. We know. I lose my
mind. Not even the kids, Greg. It's the vets right now.
I get that too. But I lose my mind when people are like, David Quinn can't coach young players. And it's just like, okay, so we're just ignoring Adam Fox.
We're ignoring Keandre Miller.
We're ignoring Keandre Miller. We're ignoring Igor Shesterkin. We're ignoring the young players that are succeeding because that doesn't fit the narrative.
And you should include in that Mika has broken out under his watch. Buch has gotten much better under his watch.
Pavel Buchnevich has played himself into a point where we actually have to have a conversation about if the Rangers can afford him long term. And he did that because he's played for David Quinn and has grown under David Quinn for the last two.
And has been on record of saying, I love playing for David Quinn.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
I honestly, if there's anything I hate in this world, when it comes to podcasting, it's being the super positive guy. It's not my shtick. I don't do it well. It doesn't come naturally. I am much better at being negative and down and sad
Absolutely.
At all times. but I honestly don't understand where the Fire Quinn narrative has come from. I get it. He's not perfect. He's going to make mistakes. I've watched enough NHL in my life where what I'm seeing from David Quinn doesn't hurt the Rangers in a way that a lot of the fan base thinks it does. It doesn't. We just sat through Alain Vigneault. We saw Alain Vigneault refuse to play the young players. We're seeing it now when he's in Philly. He's scratching Travis Konechny. The team is getting shot to death. Connor Hart is regressing before our eyes. Like, it's worse. It was worse before this. And I understand that the "it can be worse" argument is unacceptable and it shouldn't be used when it comes to coaches. But I can't think of one thing David Quinn has done where I'm like, that's the thing. He's got to be fired. I can't do it anymore.
I'll say a couple things. For me, the time to evaluate him, obviously you're going to, I mean, day to day, my job is literally to question his decisions, which I do every day. I get smirks, I get eye rolls, you know, that comes with the territory of being a coach. And there's definitely things that he does where in the moment passing, I'll say, and I've written about a lot of these different things that I find it to be a questionable decision for whatever reason. There's nothing that I have found that I think is egregious so far in my time covering him. And I still think that the jury is very much out as to, does he fit this team long-term? Will he be here when they really do start contending? There's plenty of time for us to assess all of that. But so here's what I wonder with the fans a lot, right? Is it really, cause you're saying like everybody wants him fired, right? Is it a vocal minority on Twitter, or are there really a lot of Rangers fans who think that way? And sometimes it's kind of hard to tell because I don't, you know, I deal in Twitter quite a bit, as you guys know, but I also get emails from fans and interact with fans in other ways. And there are a lot of people who I find to be more level-headed when it comes to everything. But I think, especially in a market like New York, you guys know I spent some time covering the Yankees when they had Girardi and they weren't winning World Series, but they were making the playoffs every year. And it was always amazing to me how fans found everything, every little thing that Girardi would do, they would pick it apart and find a reason to criticize it. And I just think it kind of comes with the territory in today's world of social media, where fans have the ability to tweet at a beat writer, tweet at one of you guys, complain about every little thing, that it's just kind of an easy thing to do. And therefore the criticism seems to be more prevalent and louder than it was 10, 15, 20 years
ago. New is always fun and easy. That's it. New is always, you can get a new guy in here and then the shine is there for the first 8 games. Yeah. Yeah. And then it's gone. Yeah. That's it. So I don't know if it's the vocal minority or not, but whenever I put like Twitter polls up and I get like 2,000 votes on it, it's usually 50-50. Like, people want to fire him or keep him. And that's just New York media. That's where we go.
There are definitely people who are clearly taking an issue with him. But like, I made a joke about this. But it's true. The first period of the first game, everything had been during training camp. Everybody was like, oh, we're so excited about these rookies. There's so many things to be excited about with this team. And the first period of the first game, the Fire Quinn stuff started, and it's just
amazing.
Like, it can drive you crazy if you let it. I like to kind of pick my spots to clap back and make points to counter whatever people are saying if I disagree with it. But it kind of adds to the fun of it a little bit because everything is like so heightened. But it also can be ridiculous. And Vince, I feel your frustration, Greg.
The podcast host of me, it says there's a remaining meeting time thing for 2 minutes. Do we have to wrap up here?
Yeah, you know what's interesting?
Yeah, to tell.
I never go this long on these podcasts.
Yeah, I think we have 2 minutes to wrap up.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to have to wrap it up. You know, I can go through my company's Zoom, and I have unlimited, but I just did my own because I've never had one of these things go 40 minutes, so.
Yep, we could have gone another hour, but I think you should, I'm just trying to help you out because I'm stressing out.
It's like Ryan is hosting my podcast right now.
I can't help myself. It's like in my blood. I was like looking at it. I was like, oh my God.
All right. Well, thank you guys for coming on. I'm glad we did this. You owed me a couple. I mean, I had done, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 times on your podcast. Mm-hmm. So I'll take payments for the other ones when you guys get a chance.
You think we get paid? That's crazy. we'll have you back on sometime in the future, you know.
Yeah, I know you guys are busy. You guys are big time now. I came in, you know, not at the beginning, but when you guys were still relatively kind of upstart, I think. And
no, we were already established. Thanks.
relatively upstart.
No, we've been the number one.
You weren't with the Athletic at the time. I know that.
We were just. It was like 2 weeks before. And then I saw you in person and I shook your hand and said, the Athletic signed us today. And you went, what? Are you serious? And I was like, yeah, isn't that crazy? They're like, you're lying. And I was like, no, it happened. So fun times. You can follow us at me on Orion Meat on Twitter. You can follow Greg at Blue Shirts Break, number one Rangers podcast for The Athletic, now hosted by a beat writer. I think I did all that, Greg. Did I do it right?
We're the number one non-beat writer pod, and we're also the number two overall Athletic podcast. I don't know what Michael Russo puts in the water. I'm trying to figure it out.
There it is.
But he crushes us all the time.
There you go.
All right, boys. Thank you. Appreciate it. Talk to you guys soon.
Talk soon, buddy.
Okay, big thanks to Ryan and Greg. I've had a chance to get to know those guys a little bit in the last couple of years by going on their podcast, through Twitter, through text, through all that kind of stuff, and definitely have a lot of fun with them. I appreciate them because they're passionate. I think they're rational most of the time, but they also don't take themselves too seriously, which I think is fun, and that's why I've always enjoyed going on their podcast, and I knew that it would be a lot of fun to have them on here. I would say go check out their podcast, you know, for sure, but definitely listen to this one first. All right. With that, we will move on to this week's Twitter questions, and we will start with a question from Diane Wilkins, who asks, have they thought of putting Keandre on the power play? He has a all caps bomb. Well, Diane, that actually did come up today with David Quinn. The power play units have been struggling. I went back and did the quick little tally myself and figured that the Rangers in the last seven games are 2-for-23 on the power play. Their power play currently for the season ranks 25th in the NHL. They have a success rate of under 14%. That's after having a success rate of nearly 23% last season, so they're down like 9 percentage points right now. So not good. The power play has been an issue. It has been nowhere near as efficient as it was last season, even though they're dealing with mostly the same personnel. Tony DeAngelo is obviously a loss. David Quinn was asked about how much they missed Tony DeAngelo, and his response I thought was pretty accurate, that he feels that they get pretty much what they got from DeAngelo from Fox, who is now the quarterback on that top power play unit. You guys know, as I've written about and said on the show, that I feel like Adam Fox has been, in a lot of ways, the Rangers' best player this season. So I don't think that it's an issue having Fox on the number one power play. But maybe where the issue is, and I wrote about this today or Tuesday for those of you that are listening to this later in the week, is the trickle-down effect. Not having DeAngelo means that Fox moves up from power play one, from power play two to power play one, and now you have a little bit of a hole on power play two. Jacob Trouba has been the point man on power play two. He has yet to record a point on the power play, so you can definitely say that you can improve there, and that's where Keandre Miller might come in. But I also wonder, and we didn't ask Quinn this specifically today, I'll probably follow up on it on Wednesday, if they were to use Keandre Miller on power play two, would it be in that point man quarterback role? Or would they want to position him near one of the circles where we know that, as Diane pointed out, he has a bomb of a slap shot and you could have him unleash that in those situations? So perhaps Miller will get a chance to be the point man on that second power play unit. It sounds like Quinn is definitely thinking about it, definitely considering it. We didn't get a chance to see them practice with the power play units today, so it might be one of those things that we find out for sure what it looks like once the game comes around on Wednesday night against Boston. But even more so than power play two, even more so than Miller, who I do think has earned a potential opportunity there, the key for the Rangers is getting the top unit going, because we know that the top unit is going to see two-thirds, maybe even three-quarters of the ice time in power play situations. And the weird thing for me right now with the top power play unit is I actually don't really have any qualms with the personnel. The Rangers, we talked about for a long time, needed to get another left-handed shot on there. They've done that by adding Pavel Buchnevich. Buch has been really good at even strength, but he only has two power play points so far this season. Along with Buch, they have the usual cast of characters. We talked about Fox, Mika Zibanejad, Artemi Panarin, and then Chris Kreider at the net front. Should they change any of those guys? I don't know. I think they might. Quinn made it sound like we should expect to see some changes for the game on Wednesday night, but I don't know exactly what that is. Maybe Kaapo Kakko is a guy that you could give a shot there. He has been playing pretty well recently. You could argue that he's earned it. And with Buch,
they've kind of had him in that center position, you know, in front of Kreider, but in between Zibanejad and Panarin. So maybe they want to get a lefty shot on that right circle to set up the one-timers that way. But I really think that it's more a matter of getting these players going. Guys like Mika, who we talked about in the first segment, needs to play better. And he was such a weapon on the power play last year that if he starts rolling, all of a sudden that power play unit looks a lot better. Panarin obviously isn't going anywhere. Kreider does seem to be their best net front guy, even though he hasn't been playing great there so far this season. His history shows you that he does usually belong on that tap power play unit. And again, I wouldn't argue with Fox as the point man. So the power play is an issue. It's still pretty early, but the numbers aren't great right now. 2-for-23 over the course of 7 games is not going to cut it. The Rangers need to get it going. They've had games where the puck movement has looked really good on the power play, but whether it's one pass too many, taking more of a quote-unquote shooting mentality, they need to get more pucks on the net. They need to generate more offense, produce more points from the power play, and that is the next step. So, Diane, to get to your original question, I do think that there is a good chance you see Keandre on the power play, almost certainly the second unit, and I would definitely be interested to see how he looks there, but I don't think that's going to solve all the Rangers' power play issues. I just think that a host of guys need to play better in those situations. All right, moving on to the next question, which comes from Braden BLM, who asks, who is the better left-handed defenseman for the third pairing, Hayek, Smith, or Johnson? He also asks, is there a market we can grab someone who isn't a ghost for left-handed defensemen? Well, the market, we've talked about guys like Vince Dunn before, but to be honest with you, I don't know if I see the Rangers making a move to try to acquire a defenseman right now. We know that the third pair has been an issue, but overall the defense has been pretty good. We've talked about this quite a bit. Shots against are down. Scoring chances are down. The Rangers overall have looked like a much better team. The top four defensemen have really solidified. I think the Rangers basically have their pair set for the rest of the year when you look at Ryan Lindgren and Adam Fox as one pair. And then Jacob Trouba and Keandre Miller have really meshed pretty well. I think that chemistry, we're seeing it get better each game. I thought they both played well on Monday night against the Islanders. So your top four are set, and Quinn is going to ride those guys. Each of those four has very consistently lately been playing more than 20 minutes a night. Fox has been like 25, 26 minutes a night. He is being used in all situations right now, and Quinn is really leaning on him. So you're going to see those top four play the heavy minutes, and then the bottom pair is going to be more sheltered. The question of who is the best option there, that's hard to say right now because I don't think that any of the guys they've put out there have been great. Anthony Boteto had that goal, and Braden didn't mention Boteto, but you got to throw him in that mix. Boteto, Hayek, Smith, and Johnson, two of those four, given the current players on the roster, are going to play. Boteto did have that goal, obviously grabbed some headlines with that. Overall, though, I don't know if he's been great defensively. I don't know if I've seen really consistent play out of him. Johnson, we've talked at length about the issues there. He certainly didn't inspire a lot of confidence when he was healthy. And then Smith, who is closer to returning than Johnson, I should note. Smith was a full participant in practice on Tuesday, so he could be an option for them on Wednesday or Friday. It doesn't look like he's going to be in the lineup on Wednesday. But once he comes back, and then Johnson sometime after him, I don't know if it's going to be another week more, he's dealing with a groin injury, and you have all four of them. For me, I think the guy who, unless he totally flames out, should be in there is Libor Hayek, because quite frankly, you don't feel great about those other options anyway, so why not give the young kid, the most talented kid, a chance? Why not let him learn on the fly a little bit? Why not try to aid his development in real NHL games? So for me, Hayek is definitely the guy that I'm keeping in, and you're playing him on the left side. And then on the right side, we've seen Boteto play there. We've seen Smith play there. We haven't seen Johnson play there. I don't know for sure if he's never played there in his NHL career, but I know the Rangers have used him exclusively on the left side so far. So you would think that if Hayek is going to be on the left side, that the right side would be Smith or Boteto. And you know what? For me, I'm just going game by game, whoever's playing better. If the guy you have in is getting the job done, you keep him in. If not, you healthy scratch him and you put the other guy in. I don't think there's a great answer to this question for you, Braden, but I also don't know if I see any traction with the Rangers pursuing a guy like Vince Dunn or any other option through a trade. They have so many young defensemen coming, one of them being Hayek. Tarmo Ryuninen is in Hartford and could be an option at some point this season. By next season, I think you're going to see Nils Lundqvist on this team and vying for a roster spot and a lineup spot. Further down the line, you have Matthew Robertson, you have Zach Jones, you have Braden Schneider. So the Rangers have all of these young defensemen coming, and their top four is pretty well established right now. So I don't know if a splashy move is in the cards for them. I could be wrong. Something could come out of nowhere, and the Rangers might make a move if they really feel like that bottom pair is a problem. But right now, I think you're looking at Hayek, Smith, Johnson, Boteto. Two of those four are going to play. And for me, it should be Hayek and then pick a name out of a hat, you know, whichever one of those other guys is playing the best on a given day, week. That's who you go with there. All right. Final question comes from Jonathan M., who asks, if the Rangers fall a little behind the pack come the trade deadline, do you think they consider trading Booch, Strome, and Smith? Booch is getting lots of deserved love, but he'll be expensive, and Kratsov and Gauthier can't crack the lineup as is. So, Jonathan, very good question. And had you asked me this before the season, I definitely thought that Booch was not a guy who was certainly going to get traded, but certainly would be talked about. Now, with Booch playing well and kind of showing versatility with his defensive abilities, with his penalty killing, I looked this up the other day, and he has actually been the most used Ranger forward in penalty kill situations this season, which is nobody, I think, saw that coming at the beginning of training camp. But Booch is proving to be a really valuable guy for this team. David Quinn really likes him. The front office really likes him. I think that in an ideal situation, they want to keep him around. The question is, what's that going to cost? I don't know. The Rangers should at some point in the near future be having that conversation with Buchnevich's agent, because they have to determine long term, does it make sense to pay him? It might look like another bridge deal. It could be a short term thing. I do think, though, in an ideal situation, the Rangers would look to protect Buchnevich in the expansion draft and have him on the team for at least the near future, because they view him as a valuable guy, a guy who does some of the dirty work, if you will, that some of their other skilled forwards don't. So Booch, I think, has definitely increased his chances of sticking around with the way that he's played so far this season. We know he'll be a restricted free agent at the end of the season, and the Rangers will have to pay him. But as far as their salary cap for next season, I think they can afford it. The question is more long-term. You know, what does a long-term deal look like for him? Can they afford that down the line when they have all these other young guys they have to pay? Strome is a guy who I think in most circumstances the Rangers would consider dealing. The problem right now in this moment is that their center depth has taken a hit with the injury to Filip Hedl and to a lesser degree with the injury to Colin Blackwell. So right now Strome is a very necessary guy for this team because Mika Zibanejad is struggling. Your third line center is Brett Howden, who I think is, you know, doing some of the gritty things that we know the Rangers like Howden for, but he certainly is not a guy who profiles as a top six option. Quite frankly, he's probably best served on the fourth line. Kevin Rooney, same thing goes for him. You're looking at a fourth line kind of guy. So until Filip Hedl gets back, I think the Rangers would have a hard time trading somebody like Strome because he's a necessary guy in their lineup right now, and he has been producing of late. We do know that the Rangers looked into trading Strome this offseason. We do know that in the long run, they don't seem to be sold on him as their second line center for good reason. I do think that if the right deal comes along, they would definitely consider taking it. But I don't see that happening anytime soon. Ask me again around the trade deadline when we see for sure if Hedl is back. But right now, Strome is a kind of necessary guy for this team if they're going to win games. I do think that eventually a decision is going to have to be made on Strome, whether that means a trade, whether that means expansion draft, or just moving on from him at the end of his contract. As for Smith, yeah, sure. I mean, if the Rangers find a team that wants to take on Brendan Smith, they would absolutely entertain that deal, I think, especially given the fact that he isn't even a regular in the lineup right now. But I'm not sure how much of a market there would be for him. I don't know if the Rangers have a lot of guys to quote unquote sell off right now with this current roster. They do have a group of forwards who they're going to have to make some tough calls with when it comes to the expansion draft. You know, guys like Julian Gauthier, guys like Brandon Lemieux, guys like Brett Howden are kind of on that bubble. So if another team showed interest in one of those guys, maybe the Rangers would pull the trigger on that deal. But they don't have a guy like, for example, Chris Kreider last year, an expiring contract, a veteran, a commodity in the eyes of other teams who you could probably get a first-round pick or more for. I don't know if I see that. Beyond Booch. Booch is really the guy, right? But do they want to trade him right now? I don't know. That's tough to say. And, you know, Jonathan mentioned Kratsov just as an example. I do think you kind of see a path for a guy like Kratsov to be in the top nine, because right now, as well as we think Phil DiGiuseppe is playing, he's probably not a long-term answer in your top nine. So they do have an open winger spot for a guy like Kratsov or Morgan Barron to step into, whether it's later this season or next season. When you go further down the line and talk about a guy like Gauthier, well, I don't know if the Rangers are convinced that he's a top nine guy right now, quite frankly. So Booch, for now, I think if I had to put a percentage on it, I would say 60-70% chance he's going to stay. You know, ask me again in a few weeks, in a couple months, as we get closer to the trade deadline. Preseason, I probably would have said 50-50, but I do think Booch has helped his cause, and I do think that he's showing his value to the team right now. All right, that's going to do it for the questions this week. I do want to address one final thing, though, before we sign off, and that is this: for our written content on all of our properties, Loha.com, NorthJersey.com, all the different USA Today sites that my work appears on, we have made the switch this month for February, and it will be this way going forward for the foreseeable future, that our paywall pops up sooner than it did in the past. In the past, you would get 7 free articles a month before the paywall kicked in. Now, that has decreased to 5 free articles a month before the paywall will hit, and basically you need to either subscribe or you can't read anymore until the calendar turns to the next month. I wanted to be upfront about why this is important. I'm not going to get into the state of the economy or anything like that, but long story short is that every publication, you know, we were a large group of newspapers that are currently selling fewer newspapers than we've ever sold, and we're looking towards digital, as we've been doing for well over a decade now, as the place where our work lives. Our focus is primarily on digital coverage. We still put out newspapers in a lot of different places, but my day-to-day focus is our websites, our digital coverage, the stories that I'm writing that go up online right away, and the podcast, and all this other stuff. For us to maintain over the long run, all those people that used to subscribe to newspapers, we hopefully want them to subscribe to our digital platforms, to our digital product. Now, our digital product is a fraction of the cost of the newspapers. That's the good news. I would never tell anybody what to do with their money. If you don't want to spend your money on the work that I do and the work that my colleagues do, I totally understand. I respect it. I would never begrudge you for it. But if you appreciate the work, if you like looking at my stuff every day, as you know, I produce usually multiple stories a day, I would sincerely appreciate if you support the work. I can tell you we have some great deals going on all the time, but the deal right now is like jaw-dropping. We are giving the first 6 months away for $1. $1 right now. So for us to survive in the long run, it is critical for us to continue to grow our base of subscribers. The encouraging thing is it has been growing. I know a lot of you already do subscribe. I thank you. I thank you. I thank you. I am very, very grateful for you supporting this work. I can tell you that I will bust my butt, as I have been doing for the last couple of years on this beat, to provide unique content, creative content, multiple stories a day in a lot of cases. And it's not just me. If you're a big sports fan, we have almost all of the major New York sports teams covered with a beat writer who's devoted specifically to that team. So if you pay this dollar for 6 months, you're not only getting my Rangers coverage, you're getting our Giants coverage, our Jets coverage, Mets, Yankees, Knicks. And then on top of that, just to dive a little deeper here and kind of give you guys the full realm of what you would be getting for a subscription, we have sites all over the Northeast, all over the country, really, but particularly the Northeast, where I would assume most Rangers fans live. My host site is LoHUD.com, which covers Westchester County, Rockland County, Putnam County. So along with getting all these pro sports teams coverage, if you subscribe to LoHUD.com, you also get tons of local coverage of what's going on the news side of things in Westchester, Rockland, and Putnam. But all of my work also appears on several of our Atlantic properties. So if you live in North Jersey, we have NorthJersey.com, and you get all your local news from NorthJersey.com. If you live in Jersey, let's say Monmouth or Ocean counties, Asbury Park Press covers all your local news. If you're in New York, let's say Poughkeepsie, Dutchess County, we have the Poughkeepsie Journal. Further upstate, we have publications in Middletown, Binghamton, Ithaca. There's tons of them. So if you have any questions about which site works best for you, depending on where you live, and you want to get my Rangers coverage, plus the coverage for the other sports teams, plus your local coverage, feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to talk you through it, help you find the right site. And as I said, my work appears on all of those sites. All of those sites get every story that I write. Plus, I should note that you also get all of the national news from USA Today with that. So I wanted to touch on this one time on the show to kind of really explain this paywall thing, because I know that a lot of you are noticing it popping up more frequently. It is crucially important to the survival of not only us here at USA Today, but every newspaper in the country, that if you appreciate their work, if their work is valued by you and the people in your family, and you would be so kind as to buy a subscription, it will really, really help sustain us in the long run. And we're trying to make these costs as manageable as possible. Even before it was $1 for 6 months, I know we had $1 for 3 months. So I touched on that, wanted to go over some of the business side of things a little bit here with you guys. And now we're going to move on. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast coming a day early. I hope you guys enjoy the rest of the week. I hope you enjoyed our interview with the Blue Shirts Breakaway guys. And I will talk to you all next week when we'll be back on the usual schedule with a new episode on Thursday morning.